In this episode, I talk about a disturbing situation where some professionals today are actively making students feel bad about themselves, all in the name of caring about horses. I'll share my thoughts on that and how you can avoid falling into this trap. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. Okay, this episode is probably going to come off a little bit more like a public service announcement, because that's actually what I'm thinking it is. And it's come up from things that I've seen in real life, things that I've seen over the years, and of course, everything is sort of condensed and amplified on social media, which I guess the good news of that is you can see patterns a little more quickly because there's so much of it. So I'm seeing students experiencing something out there that doesn't feel healthy, and it's definitely not necessary. But in a way, it's effective. I'll explain that in a minute. So what I'm talking about is a communication and a marketing style that's used in certain circles of the horse industry by professionals, and it seems designed, maybe consciously, maybe unconsciously, but it's designed to make you feel bad about yourself and then frames the teacher or the professional as the only one who truly understands and can see this and knows how to do things better. Better because everyone else is doing it wrong. You just don't see it yet. And what I mean when I say it's effective in its way is because it does get people's attention and it gets people to enroll. But the reason for that is because negative emotions are always going to feel more impactful. That's just, you know, I'm not a neurobiologist, but it's in our interest to be more aware of dangers, right? If someone says there's a beautiful field of daisies over there to the left, and there's like mountain lions to the right, you're going to be like, mountain lions, right? I mean, it just makes sense. Beware the danger. So whenever you bring up something that feels dangerous, that feels, any kind of like negative emotion, it's going to grab attention. And guess what? It seems, from my amateurish reading and my lengthy experience that as a human, the humans are much easier to manipulate when feeling negative emotions, when feeling bad about themselves, when feeling like there's danger around. Then if someone comes along and goes, hey, I know what to do, you're going to grab onto it. Well, maybe not you, but humans, the average human. So this kind of, I'll say marketing, just because if it's a professional and they're giving, you know, putting this out there, we'll call that marketing because everything is marketing. But you could also just say this communication style, right? But if it's not a professional who doesn't have a service that you're interested in, then it's just a person. And if it doesn't feel good, you just go away. You don't want to talk to that person. Although some people are naturally attracted to that kind of thing anyway, for other reasons that I'm not qualified to diagnose. Anyway, this style of marketing and teaching for me is a huge red flag. It's emotional manipulation with probably some doses of narcissism thrown in. And I guess it's easy to point out a problem or see a problem with a horse and say that clearly somebody else caused that problem. And if you're in that position, if somebody says it like clearly this horse was ruined and abused, and this other trainer and teacher did it so wrong that now this horse is suffering, some sort of version of that. You naturally will see the person who's saying that as a hero. You will naturally, with zero evidence. I hope the psychologists out there aren't going, what is she talking about? No, this is a thing. The person who says the criticism is going to be taken more seriously. It's just our human brains will be like, ooh, they know something, and they know something different, and this is important and bad, and this person knows the difference. So you have to, when you're in a situation where that's happening, I would say just watch that, know that that dynamic can happen, put your antennas out, because maybe it's true, but maybe it's not. And what also can happen is, so here's the horse, it has something happens, then the person in, you know, the professional in that moment says, well, clearly someone ripped this horse's mouth a new one. Right, so let's say that I'll just use that example. There's a horse who, when the bit is in the mouth, when it's wearing the bridle, the horse just like gapes its mouth and pulls its tongue up its throat, right? So it looks horrible and curls up his neck. We'll put a little of that in there too. And it's easy if you're in a clinic for someone to go, clearly this horse does not trust the bit, probably was put in draw reins, probably was, you know, had a really heavy hand, maybe was punished, blah, blah, blah. You can come up with all kinds of stories that for some horses is true, but maybe we don't know that it's true, but this is how it's being presented. Now, let's say that professional then takes the horse and works with it for a while. Now, let's see someone comes and walks on the scene, doesn't know what happened, and they see this hero professional riding this horse, and the horse is still gaping his mouth, pulling his tongue up his throat, trying to curl up. And maybe this new professional is handling it well. Maybe they're handling it tactfully. Maybe they're, you know, it's just the sort of thing. They got to do this for a little while longer, and then in a month, it'll be better. I mean, this could be true. But for someone just walking in and seeing this new person, why wouldn't that person then go, oh, well, clearly this person riding the horse has put this horse in draw reins and abuse the horse's mouth. And, you know, and we're just, now we're in the cycle of being sure of who we have to blame. And no one's really looking at exactly what the problem is. And that professional who now is riding the horse, maybe they have the horse for 6 months. They haven't solved the problem. But for some reason, every time this horse gapes his mouth, it's still blamed on this imaginary person that had the horse before them, right? So everybody's trying to blame somebody else and not focusing enough on just the what is of what's happening. So I find the more I'm around horses from beginning to end, the more I realize that some horses are the way they are because it's the way they are. And they present training challenges through no fault of anyone. I mean, I've had plenty of horses that their first instinct when feeling a bit is to open their mouth, curl up, suck their tongue up, and that's not, nothing's happened. Some horses, that lasts, you know, a few minutes. Some horses, it lasts months. Some horses never get over it. And then thank goodness for bitless and other methods of riding. But you can't, I would say, public service announcement number one, beware of professionals who automatically seem to know for sure how a problem was created and start assigning blame. Because that is going to change something inside you, the student, who's just trying to do the best for the horse, because the implication is, and you could screw it up like this also. And that's part of the emotional manipulation piece. Now, ironically, I've seen this not always, but I've seen it often happen with methods that are claiming to be the most, you know, loving and heart-centered for the horse. And it's sort of in the name of this deep connection for the horse that it's almost like, like a defender, like a warrior defender. And they don't care, you know, who they hurt as they defend the horse. And I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place for that. There are some situations that horses need people to stand up for them and be like, hell's nose, you know, I'm going to protect you against all the humans around you. You know, so I get that. But I'm just talking about normal everyday situations with normal everyday horses and normal everyday students just trying to do their best. And that's where it really feels unnecessary. And I wonder, in the spirit of loving and connection and deep reverence and heart-centeredness and all of this, I don't know how that could work along with this kind of technique of teaching, you know, making people feel bad about themselves. You know, how do you teach people to bring horses into the light? You know, bringing their horsemanship into the light while simultaneously you are dampening down the light inside of the student with fear, with guilt, with shame. Okay, and now some of you who might, you know, be thinking about marketing, because this is beyond marketing, but still, marketing is, you know, we're putting our methods out there. A lot of times it's a good technique, well, technique, it's important when sharing what you do and helping find the people that your program is most suitable for. It is important to point out pain points. So in marketing, it's like, make sure you mention the pain points. So I wanted just to bring that up because there's a huge difference between what I just described above and pointing out pain points. For me, a pain point is where you demonstrate, where the professional demonstrates and shows that they understand the precise challenges that a rider is going through or experiencing. And they can demonstrate or explain the ramifications down the road of not addressing this problem. I mean, that's education, right? So saying something like, you know, does your horse always feel crooked? Is one side always different than the other? Do you struggle in one direction? Is one hand always crossing over the neck? Like, okay, there's a pain point. Are you getting frustrated with this because you're always fighting with your horse in every corner? That's a pain point. That's me demonstrating that I really understand a problem that you might be going through and that's in my wheelhouse of what I can help you with, right? And then I can say, you know, if that sort of problem continues, that can lead to a lot of uneven wear and tear. That can lead to arthritis. It's going to prevent you from advancing. Like that's, again, that's not making you feel bad about yourself. That's just reality. That's kind of like a, hey, you know, this might not seem too bad to you, but just so you know, if you want to advance past a certain level, you're going to have to deal with it. And if you want your horse to be healthy for a long time, you're going to want to deal with this. Maybe you didn't think it was a big deal, but here's the thing, right? So that to me is a pain point, and it's really, really educational. It's really valuable to be that specific. So, you know, when I talk about not being negative and not making people feel bad, I always feel like, oh God, there's Karen again with the daisies and the butterflies. It's like, no, there's some nuance to this. There's a way to be positive without ignoring that real problems exist and they have real ramifications and consequences, and we got to do something about it. And we want to help students identify, you know, where's the match? Who's the professional who sees certain problems, understands them, and knows how to fix them? And then you compare that to the problems you're actually experiencing, the things you want to do, and then you find somebody who matches. I mean, that's just normal. That's a good plan. We don't need to be emotionally manipulated. It doesn't need to feel bad. So, how do you know if you're being emotionally manipulated? So, I'm not a psychologist, but I have experience as a human being, and I'll just riff on this a bit. So, if you're being emotionally manipulated, you will feel bad about yourself. And this is where, you know, those of you who've followed me for a long time and maybe have done the love it or change it kind of stuff, like, you know, for me, there's a difference in how my heart feels versus how my head feels. And I've learned to listen to that voice and feel the difference. So my heart just knows very clearly. And my head then might still talk me into something, right? My heart might go, oh, this doesn't feel right. And then my head goes, oh yeah, but look at all the credentials, and so-and-so takes lessons from him, and that horse is really pretty, and ooh, look at that. You know, no, it's really good, and he's affordable, and look at everybody's clapping, right? So it's not just what is being said, but my heart will just be like, it doesn't feel right. It's like, it knows. And my head has to kind of spin around and use a lot of words and talk really fast to try to, like, reel me in. So you want to trust the feeling. I tell students all the time, trust what you're feeling. You are feeling it. What you do with that feeling, we can talk about. But if you are around somebody and you start to feel bad about yourself, that is a little red flag. And often you're going to feel, I guess the opposite of that. So what's, you know, feeling good about yourself, but, like, you know, what's the nuance of that? What do you mean feeling good? To me, the opposite feeling of the bad feeling that you get when you're being emotionally manipulated, the opposite is feeling optimistic. And it will feel like the kind of optimism that's really based in reality. Where the current state of the problem seems very fairly assessed, not made worse, not made better than what it actually is. And you're going to feel newly inspired that there is a path and that you can do it. Like, oh my gosh, there's a path. Like, you see me, you see the problem, that makes sense. And there is a path forward. And I'm newly inspired and motivated to do that because, oh my gosh, I didn't even know it could be that good. So this isn't about pretending that all is good, right? It's not like, oh no, you're lovely, there's no problem. You know, it's about being realistic. It's about being very realistic about whatever current mess you're in, right? But it's being optimistic because you feel seen and understood and assessed, and that there is a path, and that you have some confidence that the path will work. It's optimistic. That is different than feeling terrible about yourself, guilty, shame, and you just hope that there can be something that could be done about it. And then some savior can come along and work their quote unquote magic. Right. So I brought up the word hope. I brought up the word optimism, and I actually made a distinction there, right? So I kind of said hope is like, well, I hope it works. Fingers crossed. Optimism to me feels like, oh, it's going to work. Like, oh, we're going to get better. I don't know how much better, but, like, I get it. I see it. I feel it. I can do it is optimism to me. And so I did do a little bit of Googling, because whenever I find words, I'm like, ooh, hope and optimism. Let's look at that. And so there's one study that I found conducted by, I'm not going to say this right, but Patricia Bruininks and Bertram Malle. Hope I said that right. And the researchers asked lay people to define hope, optimism, and other related concepts, and then write stories about when they had experienced these states. And so then they analyzed all the things that people wrote. And here's what the authors concluded. They said, hope is distinct from optimism by being an emotion, representing more important but less likely outcomes, and by affording less personal control. When people do have a high degree of control, they may no longer need to be just hopeful, but can be optimistic because the outcome is now attainable. On purpose, pause to absorb that, because there was a lot there. Hope is distinct from optimism by being an emotion, representing more important but less likely outcomes. So imagine you're there with your horse. Someone just pointed out all the horrible things that every other trainer has told you and that you're not doing, and how deeply cruel it is to the horse, how much better it can be. So now you're feeling an emotion. It's probably not feeling good. It feels really important. This is the soul of the horse. But less likely outcomes, because only that hero professional, he's the only, or she is the only one with those insights, the only one who sees it in this way. And by affording less personal control, you probably can't do it, but the hero professional can. Oof. Hope all of a sudden doesn't seem so nice. And I know, like, that's not the only definition. This is just one study, but it really connects with the point that I'm trying to get across. If you look hope and optimism up in the dictionary, it'll be different than that. So, I don't know, just entertain this. And so then the second part of what they said again, when people do have a high degree of control, they may no longer need to be just hopeful, but can be optimistic because the outcome is now attainable. They are empowered. They see the path. It makes sense. They can do it. And I guess, you know, thinking of it in respect to that definition of hope and optimism, it kind of explains probably one of the reasons why emotionally manipulative kinds of teaching methods and marketing, it just bugs me so much, because it's so opposite than what I feel in my cells. It's so opposite than the basis of everything I do. Because the way I teach is always about empowering. It's about empowering people and giving them high degrees of control over their process, right? I'm constantly asking them questions. How does that feel to you? What did you ask your horse? How did your horse answer? You tell me. I'm giving people the courage to trust their instincts and to be in dialogue with their horses. And there is no blame, especially not imaginary blame, or blame for imaginary situations that we're not sure of. So I think at the end of a lesson, at the end of a program, the student ought to feel like the hero, not the instructor. Okay, the horse is really always the hero. But of the humans, it's the student who's the hero. Hey, I've got some great news for you. Registration for the Finding the Sweet Spot of Healthy Biomechanics program is now open at a special discounted price. And we only open it twice a year, so if you don't do it now, you're going to have to wait 6 months. That's half a year. Now, this is our most transformative and most highly supported program. It will forever change the way you think about how your horse moves and how you confidently improve it. You get 6 months of live weekly Q&A calls with my coaches and private coaching included. And that's along with lifetime access to all the training materials. Now, the vast majority of students surveyed rated this program a 5 out of 5, and they said that they would confidently and enthusiastically recommend it to their friends. And because of the unique exercises and concepts taught inside the program, it's appropriate for riders of all disciplines wanting to improve how their horse moves, even with no prior dressage experience. And it's also appropriate for even seasoned dressage riders looking for a more harmonious way to ride and train. You can find out all the information at dressagenaturally.net/sweetspot. And check it out now because registration closes for the semester on October 6th. It's dressagenaturally.net/sweetspot, SWEETSPOT. All right, now back to the pod. In my experience, humans are already good enough at feeling bad about their horsemanship and riding. The heart-centered students especially already have enough guilt in there, enough feelings of not good enough. And the not heart-centered people out there who might need a wake-up call are probably not going to keep listening if they're made to feel bad about themselves. So the heart-centered ones, don't worry, they already feel bad enough about what they're doing. The not heart-centered ones who don't really care, telling them how bad they are is going to make them walk away. So I don't think it's a sound strategy either way. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. And that's a song, but don't worry, I'm not going to sing it. But imagine the technique that I'm talking about used with people. Imagine trying to train a horse by making him feel as horrible about himself as possible. If we're not going to use it on a horse, let's not use it on a human. So, my advice for students, no matter how novice or advanced you are, no matter whether you're currently stuck or things are going well and you're just looking to refine, when interviewing and investigating who's going to help you, when you're in their presence, monitor your feelings. When you spend time in the professional's presence, do you feel good about your new clarity or only sad and guilty for what you've done? Do you have to put huge trust in this person and hope it works? Or have they given you a clear path forward that you feel you can do? Do you have to obey them and only them because everyone else is wrong? Or are they helping you feel more confident to make your own good choices? Have you given your energy away to them, or is it bubbling up inside of you with excitement? You know, I've seen a lot of abuse in the horse industry, and it's not just what riders do to horses. It's what professionals do to their students. And this part is often more subtle. It's a relationship of emotional manipulation, obedience, weird demands for quote-unquote loyalty, dependency, and a long-term dissolving of a student's confidence. And that just feels icky to me, and it doesn't have to be that way. Now, admittedly, I've been known to bring out some tears in the students that I teach. There's crying sometimes. But that's not because I'm trying to make them feel horrible about themselves. They're usually tears of relief, of realization, of the release of long-held tensions, often locked in their minds or their bodies, because someone somewhere put the idea in their heads that they weren't good enough. And sometimes that someone is one's self. You're going to be okay because you already are. Let's put this on a positive note. You can have a lot of challenges currently happening, and you can have a lot that you need to learn, and you can be quite happy about starting it now. And if you've been making mistakes with your horse, and we all are, myself included, let's just name what's not working. Let's figure out the issue. What are you trying to solve? And then let's try to figure out better ways to solve it. And this, again, this isn't some Pollyanna positivity. It's just a healthy way to navigate the learning process and the relationship with your teacher. Especially when this particular endeavor is steeped in emotion, as it should be. Relationships are emotional. Horses are emotional. We're emotional. Connecting with horses can rock us to our core in ways that feel amazing and pretty horrible. Let's aim for amazing. Let's move towards something because it feels full of joy and possibility. And let's move away from something if it seems to cause undue harm or doesn't work or feels icky. Beware of moving towards something because it makes you feel bad about yourself or that it makes you feel scared to do something wrong or worried that maybe you are one of those bad people that they're talking about. So play, experimentation, free from fear or guilt, knowing that you intend to do your best. That's going to move you forward and help you be a pleasant human being to be around, which your horse will appreciate. So my advice in the spirit of the point I'm trying to make is to move towards the light, but not like a moth to a flame where somehow they're going to end up getting burned. There's a pile of dead moths under every light bulb. But move towards the light in more the spirit of like, let's turn on the lights in the room. Let's look around. What results is someone getting that you'd like to get to? Who would you like to learn how to learn? You know, that's not a sentence. Who's doing something that you'd like to learn how to do? Where you can see the cause and the effect of different techniques on different situations and horses, and you can, you know, take the ones that look most helpful that apply to you, where there's lots of possibilities, not just a narrow path, where you can understand underlying principles and see them applied in action, see outcomes. We're turning on the lights in the room. We're not shining a flashlight accusatorily and say, you did this wrong. And mostly, my advice is to go where you can be supported and lifted up. Not just because you're part of this one community, and that's the only one. Not because you're in one community that makes you feel like any other community is bad, but just where you're supported, where your questions are answered, and where they're answered in a way that makes you feel more confident and more free. And where over time you see that it's easier for you to make decisions on your own with your horse, even in unique situations, where you're never going to be made to feel bad about mistakes you've made or things that have not gone ideally. Somewhere where you have more tools that prove themselves in your practice. So an environment that helps you do what you want to do more than it talks about how bad everybody else is doing things. For learning, we need to be free of righteousness and blame and shame. I mean, advocacy and welfare is, of course, always important. And someone needs to be out there targeting people doing harm. However, it is a red flag if in the context of learning, you are constantly reminded of all the bad people who don't yet know how to do what you are about to know. As it's too easy to take that on to yourself. I mean, if you haven't learned it yet, does that mean that you're bad? That state of mind does not help the learning process. We need to be free to experiment, free to muck around, free to observe, and just look at what's happening and do our best to improve it. And don't think your horses don't feel your feeling of being not good enough. And that feeling of like, oh my God, this might hurt them. Because if you're feeling, I'm not good enough, the horse is feeling that. Exactly that. They're not feeling, oh, my human's not good enough. They're just feeling the feeling of not good enough. And of course, they're going to think it applies to them. So beware. Turn the lights on. Look around. Know you can do it. Find something to move towards in joy with skills and tools and confidence and a place to ask for help without the undercurrent of darkness and the implied threat of condemnation and judgment if you don't do it this one way. You got this. I promise. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.